morning. We are happy today because we have a new
guest
from Session. He's the Director of Technology, Climate Change and Natural Resource Management Division of the UNECA. And he's actually the former Minister of Foreign Affairs of Seychelles from 2010 to 2015. He was also the Minister of Finance of Seychelles from 2015 to 2016. And today, since the beginning of the pandemic, we actually noticed many webinars that he organized with UNECA related to Africa post-recovery on COVID-19, but not only on this, on also on energy, blue economy, and climate change. What is the outcome of this meeting and these webinars, Mr. Jean-Paul Adam?
Yes, well, good morning, Omi. It's a great pleasure to be with you. And the focus of our work at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa has very much been in the context of COVID-19, helping countries to build forward better. We sometimes say build back better, but we believe that building forward better is a better term because it shows that we need to relook at the development paradigm, that we need a different model of development to truly bring sustainable development for African countries. And that means looking at ways in which we can generate wealth and that we can invest for the future, but not purely dependent, for example, on extractive commodities and trying to grow exports through these commodities and through minerals, but looking at how we can generate wealth linked more closely to the environment from which this wealth is derived in the first place, and looking at innovative financing, which includes green and blue bonds, and ways in which we can bring more money for African countries to invest quickly, because that is the problem that we have now. The pandemic is having a real impact on people's livelihoods, and we need to invest quickly in areas that bring the most jobs and create value addition. And the good news is that the areas that do bring these most jobs are things like renewable energy and investing in, for example, climate smart agriculture. These are the areas that create the most jobs, that creates the most impact, and where we want to focus our efforts.
I see. You actually, as I said, you were the Minister of Finance from 2015 to 2016, so you know quite well the climate finance. How actually, with UNECA, you managed to explain to the countries in Africa how to find this climate finance for renewable energy and climate smart agriculture, for instance?
Well, the challenge that many African countries face is that the existing climate finance channels are quite complex, and we don't necessarily have the capacity to access them easily. So, for example, you have the Green Climate Fund. So some African countries have managed to get some financing, but not as much as the needs are. The majority of climate finance globally is actually now coming from the private sector. And this is essentially being done through bond financing. So it involves, in some cases, partnerships with the government, with the public sector, and then investments by the private sector, for example, in energy, to deliver sustainable solutions. So the work that I was doing in Seychelles was to how we could tap into this finance that already existed, which is being used in other countries, but mostly the developed world, in a way which could allow us to invest in the priorities that we have, which include the protection of our marine resources, but also looking at areas such as renewable energy. So and there are, in fact, two things that we did with Seychelles. One, the first thing was a debt swap, and that involved identifying part of our existing debt, buying it back, but using a lower price, and the savings being invested in the creation of marine protected areas. This then led to the interest in issuing a blue bond, which is essentially a form of government debt, but at a very low price, and on the condition that the finance is used to invest in sustainable fisheries. So at the ECA, we're now using these kind of models, and we're working with a number of countries to build the capacity so that they can have access to these private sector investments that can be channeled towards fighting climate change. We have started with a pilot project in West Africa, where we are working with four African countries, and in particular, Cape Verde, Cabo Verde, just had a workshop where they were discussing the opportunities to undertake a debt swap. And we are working with other countries as well to build their capacity to be able to issue green or blue bonds in a way that increases the amount of investment that is available for climate resilience. To be clear, we still need globally sourced funds. The 100 billion that was promised under Paris needs to be delivered, but there is room to bring in additional financing from the private sector into these priority areas, and in particular Africa's island states that often have challenges in accessing finance.
You've mentioned Cape Verde. Cape Verde, Seychelles are the good examples in small island states in Africa. How actually you manage to explain to the other countries how actually to understand this green bond, for instance, and these opportunities when they don't have the resources to understand? I mean, we actually understand that there are many, many capacity buildings, training, workshop, but we notice also that these workshop are actually not targeting the right population, for instance, and sometimes you find a difference between the understanding of the countries in Africa and the other countries. For instance, you understand what I'm saying?
No, I think that's an excellent point, Umi. And to be clear, we're working with different levels of capacity. We have to start by recognizing what a country itself wants to achieve. We cannot impose any projects on any country. We have to start on the basis of what a particular country wants to achieve. And even though the examples of Seychelles and Cabo Verde, they are sometimes seen as relative success stories, I will not hide from you that when Seychelles started to discuss these issues, we started as far back as 2012, we knew almost nothing about this kind of bond market. We knew very little about the opportunity for debt swaps. So it was something which was very complex even for us, even if we had some capacity. And the starting point and where the UNECA wants to support countries is, firstly, you need to be clear in terms of your own national development plan, how you will build climate resilience. And sometimes some simple actions help to build climate resilience. In Seychelles, the starting point for us was to have a marine spatial plan. And the reason we did that was that we recognized that the ocean was being abused because there were not clear rules about what activity could be done in which area. So you could have some areas which are more important for fishing, but there were clashes because these areas may have also been important for tourism. So it was about defining our marine spatial plan, and we got support for developing that. And it's this kind of activity that could be a starting point for a number of countries. So countries that we are working with, in addition, in West Africa that perhaps have less capacity, for example, we're working with Guinea-Bissau and with Mauritania. And we are doing the same capacity building with them on the basis of what they want to achieve. They are countries that have huge oceanic resources. And the starting point is to plan what those resources, what the country would like how they would like to develop those resources, obviously building climate resilience. And this is step one. And then after that, we can work really on the development of the capacity around the accessing to the bond markets and the opportunities for innovative financial instruments, which have to be linked to the realities of the local economy. So you have to also be looking at where you will create wealth locally. And this can be through fisheries. It could be through, for example, marine ecotourism. And sometimes it's good to start at a smaller level, at a small scale, and then build up. And there is certainly, I think the issue of capacity is a big one. There are a large number of African countries that don't have market access, meaning that they have never issued a bond before. That is not necessarily a problem. The first issue is to define what is the priority for climate resilience, and there is support that can be done for this. And then the second is how we will channel any funds that are raised into areas that really improve livelihoods of people in their communities.
I see. You mentioned something very interesting related to the local communities, the local economy. We actually, at ERA Environment, we follow the project, the adaptation project, the mitigation project. But it's quite hard to have the information from the international organization. And we noticed that there are many, many activities during the World Environmental Day, the Ocean International Day, and we noticed that the international organization are explaining what they will implement on the ground. But why, as you are actually a former minister, why it is so difficult to have people on the ground who are not actually linked with the international organization, who can actually explain to the community? I mean, for the ocean, you've just mentioned marine ecotourism. There is this challenge, waste management. And we notice that there are many innovative solutions. But it's always a solution that actually came from outside, come to the countries, and the local communities are not well involved. Or if they are involved, it's just for a conference. And this is actually my question. How can you integrate the local community in this kind of project on waste management in marine ecotourism, for instance, to better help this community?
But I would highlight that in Seychelles, for example, a lot of people don't understand the concept of a blue bond or a green bond. So because there is no point in having a workshop with fishermen or with economic actors in the country about something which is not directly related to their priority. You have to look at it from the perspective of the priority for that immediate community. And I think the example you gave around waste management and reducing marine waste is a good one. This is a big problem for the community. It's a barrier to develop ecotourism, but it is a problem for the community as well, because any pollution affects the community that are living in that natural environment. And in these circumstances, it's important to have the consultation around what the community themselves see as the way of tackling it. And if you look at the issue of waste, there are increasingly means by which waste can be used also in a way of generating economic activity. There's increased focus on the principles of a circular economy, where you can generate some value from waste. Now, this may be through waste to energy, for example, which is one of the strategies used in a few countries. But there are other opportunities where waste can be used for plastics can be recycled, for example, into construction. There are different examples in different countries, and it's really, I think, there has to be the facilitation in country of what will work for that particular country based on the needs of those communities. So the experts in ministries of finance, they need to understand the principles of bond financing, but the priorities on the ground, you need to identify the actions that need to be taken, which are practical based on that community. So, I mean, in some countries, you could look at developing SMEs that use, for example, digital technologies, but it will not be for every country. If it is difficult for people to access the internet at their homes, that may not be an option for that particular country. But you have to build from where you are. anticipate what will be happening in the future, but providing something which is of real economic benefit to those individuals. So when we were talking about the Blue Bond in Seychelles, we were not trying to talk to the population about the mechanics of the financing instrument. We were talking to them about what are the challenges that you are facing around fisheries, for example. And the challenges were, in some cases, there are some fish stocks, there's some species whereby there are challenges in terms of the viability of that stock because there has been overfishing in some areas, and there are alternatives that could be done, for example, targeting other species. Some of the other issues were that there are not enough cold storage facilities. So, for example, fishermen may catch fish, but then they are not able to properly process that fish because there's not access to enough cold storage. So we look at it from the issue of what is the issue that needs to be addressed that will improve the economic earning potential of particular communities. And then from there, you can generate the investment that is needed through through the bond. But it is, I think, counterproductive to market the principles of a green bond or blue bond, unless it's specifically to the professionals and experts that need to structure this at the country level. But for the individual, we need to look at it in terms of how do they feed their families. That's how you break it down.
How do they feed the family? When this community find that there is organization, we came to the community. I mean, today it's UNECA, tomorrow will be UNDP, the second day will be the World Bank. How this community will pursue their activity? This is actually also the challenge of the community to pursue the activities on sustainable fishery, for instance. How actually you do explain, as you have this experience as minister, how do you do explain to your organization that the community should be self independent also, without expecting the organization but also expecting on this creation of blue jobs, for instance?
Yes, the focus has to be, and this is where relation to bond financing, for example, it is important that the economic activity that is identified is one which is generating income in the long term, and therefore it is something which has to be selected at country level. So on the work that UNECA is doing, for example, on the green and blue bonds, we are not telling countries do fisheries, do marine-based tourism. I've used those as examples. It's not for us to define what will work in those countries. It's looking at the capacities that already exist in those countries and the abilities that may exist, building on existing opportunities for wealth generation, and how can we improve it, identifying what is the gap, what's preventing people from, for example, earning more money in this sector. So I used the example of Seychelles, where one of the key issues was access to cold storage. So then, therefore, that's a solution that can assist these populations. And by investing in cold storage, and again, it's not necessarily that the government provides this, it's rather giving them the opportunity to invest themselves so that they own these assets, and therefore it becomes part of their business model. So it's really about integrating the solution within the needs of the community. And the bond is the is the means by which you are bringing the money that is needed to invest in the first place. And the bond type of financing is not aid. It's not something which is also free. It is something which it's a form of debt, but it is a debt which is much cheaper than normal debt. And therefore, because it is debt, it has to be linked to an economic activity which will generate income in the longer term. And this can only be defined by the communities themselves on what will work the best. There is guidance and advice which is available from the UNECA, from the World Bank, from other partners, but it is based around identifying activities which will be successful. And there are ways that this can be done. Traditional knowledge has a lot of benefit, but there is also expertise which can be given based on the experience of other countries.
I see. How can you compare the African countries? Because Africa is quite huge. How can you compare the African countries with these actually specificities in these countries? You mentioned Mauritania and Guinea-Bissau, two different countries. What is your strategy when you come to the country with the activity you want to help them to implement?
Well, the first stage is to listen, because the country themselves know what the challenges are. What are the activities, what are the economic activities that they're already doing? So if we take Guinea-Bissau and Mauritania, they both already, for example, are involved in fisheries, but it is different types of fisheries. In Mauritania, there is a lot of there are a lot of industrial fisheries that are linked also to partnerships that they have with other countries. So there is that level of industrialization. And one of the questions that emerged, not that ECA brought this to them, but they themselves recognized that there is not enough ownership, for example, of local fishing entrepreneurs. So one of the key interventions that can be done is to empower local businesses to be more involved in the value chain of fisheries. And that involves fishing entrepreneurs at the level of the fishermen themselves. So is it a question of the type of technology, the boats that they are using, but also looking further up in the value chain, the processes, how that investment can be brought in so that there is more value derived within that specific community. The first step that the ECA would do is to listen to what is the priority of the country itself, provide analysis also, because sometimes the specific countries may have certain ideas, but we can give the perspectives as well based on experience of elsewhere to be able to take an informed decision. And the goal is really to support that country to do what that country wants to do itself and advise on how this can be done in a way which builds climate resilience in the long term. So for example, a lot of African countries are losing a huge amount of money from illegal fishing. There's, in fact, almost half of the overall value of fisheries is lost through illegal fishing. So there's a lot of measures that can be taken along those lines, and by empowering local communities to be engaged in the wealth creation themselves and cutting out the illegal and illicit financial flows. Of course, it's not something that's necessarily straightforward, but the whole point is to build the capacity to address these issues.
How?
Well, there are numerous ways, and there is not one specific solution. So if you look at the question of illegal fisheries, to take that as an example, one of the first elements is to have transparency in terms of the fishing agreements that are in place. Unfortunately, too many countries do not publish, for example, the agreements that they have, and therefore it's very easy for corruption to be in place, because if you don't know what you're supposed to be earning in the first place, then it's much easier to lose the revenue that you get. The second element is to ensure that there is appropriate mechanisms for enforcement against illegal fishing. This can be difficult for countries with limited resources, but there is usually at least some capacity. What has worked well in quite a few countries is also incentivizing reporting of bad behavior. So in many countries, fishermen themselves are actually the best police, because if they know that foreign vessels are not supposed to be fishing in a certain area, they will often report themselves. But then you have to make sure that there is the appropriate deterrent in terms of fines that can be applied and so on, as well as the seizure of vessels. So the all of this leads to reforms of the legislative codes, its building of capacity of the police and of the necessary investigating agencies, and ensuring that you have this framework that links in and that is applied consistently. So there are countries that have been able to do so, and it starts with a review of the legal frameworks, usually as the first step.
I see. There is actually another point that is very important, is natural-based adaptation solutions.
Yes.
You integrate this in this green bond, or you just integrate natural-based solutions? Tell me more about this and your strategy on this point.
Well, a nature-based solution is an activity whereby you are protecting nature, but through that process of protecting nature, you are also creating additional opportunities for economic activity. So, for example, recent studies have shown that with the creation of marine protected areas, you can actually increase the catch within 5 years if the marine protected area is appropriately targeted and that it is respected. Research that was done by the Network of Marine Protected Areas of the United States showed that for every 5% increase in marine protected areas, within 5 years you could get a 20% increase in catch. So, and if I take the Seychelles example, a marine protected area is not just a question of selecting one random area. It's about looking at the areas which are important for fish reproduction. And then you protect those areas with the principle that this will generate future improvements in fisheries. And if I take the example of Seychelles again, this was not even, for some species you need some scientific research and so on, but for some species we didn't even need to do any scientific research. The fishermen know this themselves. They know the areas where certain fish are reproducing, and even traditional methods would say that during the spawning season, for example, you do not catch this specific species. So the knowledge is often there in traditional communities, but has often been forgotten or put aside because there may be pressures from external parties, vessels that are coming from other countries that want to fish quickly and get the resources quickly as possible. But you can get resources to protect a specific marine protected area with the understanding, link it as well to improving the opportunity for fishermen and fishing communities to earn more incomes by, for example, giving them the opportunity to invest more in the value chain, so that they're not just catching fish, but they're also processing that fish, whether it be their capacity in terms of the cold chain or in their capacity, for example, to do things like smoking, salting fish, so that you increase the value and you increase the products that they're able to use. So I'm using those as examples. Other examples of nature-based solutions would be around agroforestry, where you may have areas which are at risk from deforestation because of agriculture, but you can choose certain types of agroforestry whereby you are planting trees which rehabilitate the environment, reduce the risk of erosion, but you also gain economic benefits from those specific trees. If they are fruit trees in some instances, if we look at the example of Ethiopia, where the ECA is based, there have been positive examples where they plant trees which have been conducive for bees, and they have linked this to forest-based production of honey. So it's about linking economic activity to a respect for nature and which generates economic activity. There are numerous other examples as well. You can, for example, forests are also extremely important for water resources, and you've got examples where you can develop projects that produce water, terms of mineral water, for example, but also provide reservoirs which provide drinking water. And by appropriately planting around those reservoirs, you provide natural protection for that water resource, which reduces the impact of drought and also reduces the risk of flooding. So these are the kind of examples of nature-based solutions where you invest in the improvement of the natural environment, but you're creating economic activity at the same time.
Nature-based solution is key elements of the COP26. You, as someone who actually portrayed the Africa recovery post-COVID-19, nature-based solution can be the solutions also that you would portray during the COP26?
Absolutely, but I think it's important to note that nature-based solutions on their own are not going to be the solution. You need nature-based solutions allow you to address the challenges in areas of extreme sensitivity. If we take, for example, agriculture, if we pursue agriculture on the basis of clearing vast areas of forest to make way for agriculture, we will very quickly create problems for ourselves in Africa because we will be destroying the protection that we have against floods and so on. So if we look at Eastern Africa, for example, a lot of the floods that have happened, which then have been followed by droughts, have been linked to unsustainable land use associated with the practice of agriculture. Unfortunately, a lot of the time, it's also because of the access to technology. So if we can prioritize investment in nature-based solutions as part of the solution, but on its own, it will not provide the complete solution, because Africa also needs to sustainably industrialize, and a lot of that involves investment in energy. That investment in energy can happen through renewables, but it would be not solely based on nature-based solutions. But nature-based solutions would be a big part of some of the major issues that emerge, such as food security.
And how about South-South cooperation in this? How can you integrate the South-South cooperation? You mentioned these countries, Mauritania, Guinea-Bissau, Seychelles, Cabo Verde. Is there any strategy that you have linked to the countries to work together, with the communities work together?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the work that we have been doing is already about showing the positive examples on what has worked in other countries within Africa. So it's not about recreating things from elsewhere, but also using the expertise from we sometimes forget that African countries are already doing a lot. And if we look at other sectors such as renewable energy, Morocco has a lot of ambition in that regard. And they have even reached the stage where they are manufacturing the technologies within their country. And this is an opportunity to link with other African countries. We also look at, if we look at countries like Egypt, they are doing a lot of work around sustainable irrigation, recognizing the water problems that they have there, and which can be deployed in other countries that have similar drought issues or water problems. So the South-South cooperation is going to be key for nature-based solutions, as well as the adoption of technologies that are appropriate for Africa in the context of a green recovery.
Okay, we are nearly at the end of this interview. I want to have your view, your message. What is your expectation for the youth in Africa?
Well, I think the first element is there has to be job creation, which is much faster than what we currently have in Africa, because the demographic growth in Africa is very significant. Young people are already the majority in the continent. And the rate of job creation does not match the growth of population. And the traditional economic activities are also not creating enough jobs. So, for example, 11% of all of Africa's exports derive from the extractive sector, but only 1% of jobs are from the extractive sector. So investing in areas such as renewable energy, and renewable energy, it's not just the It's not just the installation of, for example, solar panels. It's about looking the value chain around renewable energy. The production, first of all, of the renewable energy technologies, a lot of this can be done in Africa, the installation and also the maintenance over the long term, and then linking that as well with further research about deploying these technologies across our continent. So I think, and the work that ECA has done has shown that by investing in these sectors, we actually create a lot more jobs than if we maintain investment in, for example, fossil fuel-based sectors. We are doing a few case studies on a number of countries. One of the case studies that we did, for example, in South Africa showed that you get 250% more jobs created by investing in renewable energy as opposed to investing in fossil fuels. And we're seeing similar results in the other case studies that we are doing. So our hope for young people is that by investing in the green sectors, by creating these opportunities, we will be providing a better future for young people, and one in which they will play a big part.
In this world, the oil sector, which is actually quite high. A few days ago, Mozambique and Total left Mozambique. There was a decision on Shell, and it is a historical. How do you, as UNECA, you see this? The civil society actually portray the renewable energy and said that no more fossil fuels. But in a way, we still find these countries in Africa which actually have this contract with these fossil fuel companies, even those I mentioned, Shell and Total. How do you see it? How do you deal with it?
The first issue that Africa has to face is that we have an energy deficit. There are almost 600 million people on the continent who don't have access to electricity. So investing to achieve universal access to electricity will be cheapest through renewables, but it will not be only through renewables, because you need to have the base generation capacity to address the issue of intermittency in renewables. So there will be some cases in Africa where there may be some additional investments in some fossil fuels, which will also allow the increase in investments in renewables. But our guidance, based on the modeling that we've done to African countries, is to avoid, in particular, investing in technologies which will be very quickly obsolete. And chief among those is coal. And unfortunately, there are circumstances where developed countries have old technologies. They sometimes sell them to African countries. But within 15, 20 years, these technologies may be completely unviable and may be completely much too costly to operate effectively. So all of the data that we have, all of the research, shows very clearly that renewable energy represents the best opportunity for Africa in terms of not only the economic benefits that are derived by investing in these sectors, the jobs that are created, but in the long term, in terms of energy security. Because Africa, despite in many cases Africa producing petroleum products, quite often these are refined elsewhere, and Africa has been absolutely at the mercy of global price fluctuations. And having a secure form of energy based around renewables is one of the best investments that Africa can make. There will be some legacy investments, because the need in Africa is significant, but the majority of even these large companies are divesting away from fossil fuels, and this trend is expected to continue. So the guidance we give to African countries is that do not invest huge amounts of money in these sectors, because it will very quickly become unviable. There may be circumstances where you do need to do so as part of upscaling your investment in renewables in the medium to long term.
I see. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.